You for taking the time to attend to our presentation. And for the very first time, all the times I've been presented, somebody actually came up to me right in the beginning of this and said they can do my presentation for me. So, because they've seen it so many times, but we'll wait for that moment to come. So in the meantime, I'm the CEO of Citius Pharmaceuticals. For those of you curious about our location, we're headquartered in beautiful Cranford, New Jersey, otherwise known as Exit 136 off the Garden State Parkway. You're always welcome to stop by our global headquarters and visit with us. So, with that, since I'm going to be making some forward-looking statements, what I advise everybody always is that you should really consult our website, citiuspharma.com or sec.gov. Which has and type in our symbol CTXR, and you'll get every list, every app, piece of paper we've ever filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Last but not least, if you have trouble sleeping this evening, I'm going to advise you to read this statement from beginning to end, and you will fall asleep. So, with that, we share with you some investment highlights in terms of the company. So, we're a very late stage biopharma company. Our lead asset in terms of at least the FDA process is LYMPHIR, which is a purified reformulation of an IL-2 diphtheria toxin fusion protein, which is a mouthful, but nevertheless, in short, it's a biological drug that's potentially indicated for the treatment of a very rare cancer called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, and you'll hear more about it later. We also have a very unique asset in Mino-Lok, and that also is very late stage. Mino-Lok, once it's approved, will be the first and only FDA-approved product to salvage or save infected central venous catheters in a condition known as central line-associated bloodstream infections. It's in phase three. We're just about done. Just go back to LYMPHIR. LYMPHIR already has a BLA file, and I'll cover our latest occurrence there. Last but not least, we also have and it's kind of a departure going from something so serious as CTCL and salvaging infected catheters. We have a hemorrhoid drug. And the reason we do is we were a private company at one time. And when we merged in with Citius, which was public, Citius had this drug in their portfolio. Initially, we weren't going to keep it, but we took a good look at the market. And what's really astounding is that in the 21st century, there isn't a single FDA-approved prescription drug for the treatment of hemorrhoids. You have the over-the-counter market, which has Preparation H and other products like that. But when it comes to prescriptions, there's very little there. It's a giant, potentially a giant category. It really surprises me that Big Pharma hasn't done anything about this yet. Because there are millions of patient visits to doctor's offices for hemorrhoids, nothing really there of any note. So our plan with this drug is it's not something that we want to market ourselves. Ultimately, we'd like to develop it up to a point where we can prove some efficacy and then ultimately monetize it for the shareholders and sell it off to Big Pharma. The other two products are preclinicals, and right now at the moment we're on pause with their programs because we really want to devote our resources to the first three. The market opportunities are significant in that the CTCL market, while it's a small market, it's an easier market to an easy market to penetrate. It's 300 to 400 million. There are two other primary competitors there. And there is larger potential, which I'll cover in terms of moving up to peripheral T-cell lymphoma, as well as some immuno-oncology opportunities. The market for Mino-Lok is unique because it would be strictly Mino-Lok. And at this moment, we're estimating that market is about $1.8 billion, half in the US, half outside the US. And the prescription hemorrhoid market is one that I think it's the biggest one here in terms of opportunities. It's in the billions. So, in terms of cash, we have $33.3 million cash as of 6:30. Our last reported cash, which is enough for us to get through to the end of August of 24. We did a $15 million registered direct offering in May. What we received from the FDA in response to our filing was a complete response letter, and I'll get into the details of that, but it's not going to require any significant cash whatsoever. And last point here, and it's something that you can go to these meetings for the next 100 years, you're not going to hear this from a CEO, and that is that I personally have $22.5 million of my own money invested in a company, not in stock options, not in anything, but I've gone side by side for a significant number of the raises that we've done. The vice chair and co-founder of the company with me, Myron Holubiak, he has $4 million invested in a company. So, and why did we do that? Because we have a lot of confidence in terms of our portfolio and ultimately what it's going to produce. So we've got some really significant value-driving events coming up. In Mino-Lok, we expect to get a top-line readout somewhere, and it's a wide window in the first half of 24. And then we're going to be resubmitting to the FDA our response to the complete response letter by in the very early part of 24. So these, I call these our mugshots. So this is our lineup. My background real quick is I spent my most formative years actually in the beginning with a company called Cooper Laboratories, where Cooper made 150 acquisitions. I ultimately rose through the ranks from sales to strategic planning acquisitions and ultimately managing one of the company's business units. So what Cooper did, they made so many acquisitions, they formed medical specialty silos. I helped put the strategic plan and everything together for the very first one that was done extremely successfully called Cooper Vision. It was in ophthalmology, took it from $10 million. That business went from $10 million to about $700 million in about a six-year time frame, became one of the world's largest eye care companies. Today, it's inside the Cooper Company's headquartered on the West Coast. I formed Cooper Dermatology. We had Aveeno as our principal cornerstone brand. And last but not least, Cooper Dental was formed. I like to cite it. I didn't have anything to do with this, but I like the example. Cooper Dental goes out, buys a tiny little toothbrush company doing less than $1 million in revenue called Oral-B, became the world's largest selling toothbrush. So with that, after that, I went to several other drug companies, which I'm not going to get into. It'll take too much time. Myron Holubiak, who's a co-founder of the company, was formerly the president of Roche Labs US at the very end of his career with Hoffman La Roche. And I'd like to just highlight Dr. Myron Tschutchman. So Dr. Tschutchman, we hired as a chief medical officer a year before we did the deal with Lymphere. We had no idea. His background is really significant. He spent 23 years at Roswell Park in Buffalo, which is a major cancer treatment center. He published 180 papers when he was there and then went to Celgene as vice president in charge of lymphoma myeloma worldwide. Great addition to our staff and really helped us when we were looking on the acquisition of Lymphere from Dr. Reddy's. And in addition to that, once we brought in Lymphere on that transaction, we realized that we really had to boost up our staff in terms of technical support, especially in manufacturing and on the regulatory side. So we rated our vendor the best way I could describe. So we took out of that company Dr. Kelly Creighton, Catherine Kessler, and Nick Berlew. So each of those are real experts in their respective fields. And we think this is we've got now 22 people in a company. We used to be at 6 or 8 for the longest time. I can tell you this, we have no trainees, no interns. Every single person in the company is a complete total professional. So some of the recent developments in a company, as you may have, as I mentioned before, so and what we have planned is more of our milestones, and that is that, again, Lymphere, early 2024, we're going to do a resubmit, and what will happen with the resubmission is this, the FDA, I should add, will tell us within 2 weeks what our new PDUFA dates are on this drug. They're not reviewing the clinical data or anything like that. It's strictly a manufacturing test validation procedure that wasn't completed at the time of our submission. We had 4 or 5 months ago, and we thought we were getting an approval. They thought otherwise. So basically, we'll know within January whether we're 2 months away or 6 months away, or maybe something in between. Our plan is to go ahead and launch this drug in July of 24. Mino-Lok, as you heard before, It's an event-driven trial. We're past the events at this time, but we're over-enrolling that. We'll have top-line data readout there in the first half. And then with Halo-Lido, our plan is to go to the FDA. We've completed a phase IIb trial. We'll hold an end of phase IIb meeting and work out hopefully a protocol for phase III, and that'll determine what we do with the drug, because if it's a gigantic trial that they're asking for, we're done. We'll go out and hire a banker to find us a partner for it. So, Mino-Lok, just a quick overview of that. That is the very first asset that we acquired, or in-licensed, I should say. We in-licensed that from MD Anderson. The drug was actually invented by Dr. Issam Raad, who is the chief of infectious disease at MD Anderson. He was looking for something that would obviate the need for two separate surgical procedures whenever a catheter gets infected. So, basically, this market is a significant market. There are something like 4 million long-term central venous catheters placed. Most of these are cancer patients. And what can happen over time is that catheter can get infected. So, we think 500,000 incidents of these infections take place. The incident itself, a catheter-related bloodstream infection or central line-associated bloodstream infection, is deadly. In 20% of the cases, you can die. So you're immediately put into the ICU when you come down with this infection, because it's not just the catheter, but also that infection will go into the body itself. So, just so that you have an idea in terms of a catheter, this is what it looks like. So as you can see, it's got lumens for additional add-ons. But what happens is, the way this gets used, first it's implanted surgically by the collarbone, and then it gets threaded to the heart. And basically, it delivers nutrients, chemo, and other meds to that patient. It's a lifeline for the patient. And when a catheter gets infected, what can happen ultimately is that bacterial slime called biofilm can form on the inner walls, because the bacteria have a real affinity for plastic. The standard of care today for an infected catheter is to remove it and replace it. And it gets replaced sometimes in other areas. It could be down by the groin area. It gets threaded back up, and that's where you'll get significant complications arising. The cost of that is about $10,000 up for the two separate procedures. The CLABSI or CURBSI is about $50,000 to $60,000 on its own. And our plan for Mino-Lok is to price it around $4,000 per course of treatment. So the course of treatment would be 5 to 7 days. The way it would work is, the nurse comes in, injects the solution into the catheter. The catheter itself gets locked hemodynamically, so our drug does not go into the body. It stays within the catheter and a line. It sits there for 2 hours. At the end of 2 hours, the nurse comes in, aspirates out the contents, flushes the line, so the patient has uninterrupted IV flow for 22 hours a day. This is done 5 to 7 days in a row. At the end of that time frame, the catheter is completely sterilized and clean of any biofilm that may have formed on it. So, the FDA considered this to be a breakthrough, which I'll cover in a second. This was our phase IIb results. I'm not going to get into the detail of it here, because not enough time, but suffice it to say, the FDA accepted it. We worked out a phase III protocol that was a comparison of our solution to what I call a home brew. So what happens in certain cases at the hospital level, some of these patients will no longer have an access point. So the hospital will try to sterilize the catheter, and they'll use solutions that they mix up, and with mixed results. And so, the comparison is Mino-Lok solution to those home brews, and it's a negative event. The event is time to catheter failure, when the catheter fails. And we have our goal of 92 events. And at this moment, we're past the 92 mark. We're over-enrolling in order to make sure that when we submit this, that nothing, you don't know, sometimes patients will be disqualified for errors or something like that. but we're over enrolling, but we're very close to the end. So our plan is, again, as I said, top line data readout in the first half. So in terms of what type of regulatory protection we have here, the FDA really liked this. So what they advised us to do is file for something known as qualified infectious disease product. And that is something that's only given to breakthroughs. So with that, what we get is a 6-month review instead of 12 months. We get 5 additional years of regulatory protection. And that is on top of the Hatch-Waxman level of protection. So this is actually better than patent protection. I mean, most people can't compute that, but we'll have 9 to 10 years of total free and clear runway. No generic can come in and do what's known as a paragraph 4. So with that, let me move in quickly into Lymphir. So Lymphir is an asset that has history to it. So that history is this. This drug was originally developed by Ligand. Then ultimately Ligand sold it off to Eisai Pharmaceuticals of Japan. Eisai had it on the market for a couple of years, 3 to 4 years, but they had as a condition of their approval that they had to reformulate the drug, not for safety reasons, but there are unfolded proteins inside that formulation. The FDA didn't want that, so they ran into an inventory issue. They had to pull the drug off the market in order to complete that reformulation project. When they did, they went back to the FDA, and the FDA goes, sorry, new drug. You have to do another phase 3 with 71 patients and 20 patients and a lead-in. It took from 2014 to now to get that study completed, till last year, actually. So, and a reason for it was because it's a very small universe, and it's hard to get in these very small universes of patients. It's hard to get enrollment. So, but it took all that time. And then what happened was, Eisai stayed with this program actually all the way to the end, and they're still involved with us with the FDA. They licensed out the drug to Dr. Reddy's Laboratories of India, a big generic company that was on a branded expansion program in the U.S. side here. So with that, what happened was Dr. Reddy decided in 2019 or 20 they were getting out of the branded business. They made a bunch of acquisitions, including this. They exited. There was an auction. We put $40 million down on this at the time, and a reason for it was because they were on their very last patient. So so we filed a BLA in September. We closed on a deal September of 21, and then in September of 22, the BLA got filed. The FDA gave us a 23 July PDUFA date. We got that complete response letter just at the end of July. And we're moving ahead now to get this so ultimately we'll be approved. We're confident we'll get an approval out of this. So with that, this is just to give you an example of what cutaneous T-cell lymphoma looks like. It's not a pretty picture, but it's in two phases. The first phase is the topical phase where it looks like a rash almost, and a dermatologist treats it. When it goes into the tumor phase, it goes to the oncologist. What I should say about this disease, it's awful because it's accompanied by extremely severe itching. And so the drugs that are used here sometimes can help. I'll skip this. So these are the primary drugs that get used in this treatment. These two drugs, the one Seagen has and the one that Kyowa Kirin has, they came on Eisai pulled their drug off the market. And what happened here is this market actually expands with every new entry. So what I want to emphasize is when we get approved, we're not going to be stealing market share from anybody. What will happen is the oncologist is doing everything possible to keep that patient living longer and as comfortable as possible. So they'll go from one drug to the next. There's no protocol that says this should be number one, this should be number two, and this should be number three. That's not how it's going to work. As soon as this comes on, it'll start getting used. The price for treatment, and we don't have to apply for new costs or anything or new selling prices with any agency. It's $300,000 for a course of treatment here. So we expect that we can launch this with a small number of representatives in the field. We're already working with Eversana to look at it. We know that there are 2,000 oncologists around the country that treat this, and that's it. And we can cover that market with 20 representatives. So that's the results. That 36.2% objective response rate, which is right in line with most cancer therapeutics. So basically, this was some of the data from the trial itself that you can look up online. And what I want to highlight for you here is there is upside here. So there are two investigator INDs that are filed, one at the University of Pittsburgh and one at the University of Minnesota. The investigators in these two trials they've taken it on themselves are studying the combination of our drug with Keytruda. And they're looking at Keytruda failures in a case in University of Pittsburgh. In University of Minnesota, it's a combination of our drug with CAR-T, which is another potential rapidly growing treatment potential in cancer. So we think, I can't predict what this is going to look like. I have no idea at the moment, but if anything happens here, it'll be more than a home run for the company. It'll be a grand slam. So with that, let me move quickly into Halo-Lido. Basically, as I said before, we completed a phase 2B trial. We're meeting with the FDA at the beginning of January, and we'll look and see what that protocol looks like. It is a big market opportunity, and we think once we were able to show that we have data that proves that it can really work, we'll be able to satisfactorily sell this off to big pharma. So in terms of what we look like, we have 158 million shares outstanding. As you can see that myself and Myron are some of the largest shareholders, but I should highlight something about our shareholder base for you. We have 60,000 retail investors in the stock right now. And the reason for that is because they came in on a Reddit rumor a couple of years ago. So we're living with them. So, but in the meantime, we also have out of this total, we have 40 million shares are held with institutions. Out of that 40 million, 15 million are index funds. The big names are in here in terms of the 40 million that includes BlackRock, Vanguard, et cetera. So we have a good shareholder base, and our objective right now is to move that shareholder base and bring in fundamental funds. Right now, we don't have any fundamental funds because they're all waiting to see what our data looks like once we get an approval, and also to see what the data on Mino-Lok look like. So coming up in 24, it's going to be a great year for us because we'll have numerous events, numerous milestones being met, as well as what we're doing in terms of shareholder outreach. So I've got 10 seconds for one question.
Yeah, we should ask quickly. You obviously have an extensive pipeline, and obviously there's a lot of potential. What do you think would be the quickest revenue generator out of all of
them? So the quickest revenue generator is going to be Lymphir, the cancer drug, simply because it's the closest one to an approval at this point. And that approval should take place in 24. And we do have plans already to launch. We've got all the mechanisms in place for it. And we've been studying that market very carefully for the past year. So, yes. 300 to 400 million is the market size for that, and that those with those two drugs that are there, plus some other drugs that are used. Yes.
Can you just touch on the warrants and strike on the warrants and what kind of cash that you can see?
So basically, those warrants, about 15 million out of those warrants belong to myself and to Myron Holubiak because of our participation in raises. So somewhere around a $40+ million range is, I think, where we are with those warrants, or a little bit more.
So but, obviously, if the catalyst happened and you go into late 2024, the stock goes up.
Right. We have other non-dilutive sources of funding for the company, and that is with both Lymphir and Mino-Lok. We have interest right now we have worldwide rights to those two drugs, except for Lymphir. We don't have Japan and Korea, but we have interest from other companies for out-licensing to those markets. We are not going to give them away for free. Usually the deals that get structured are upfront payments with milestones. So that's going to be another source of non-dilutive funding for the company as we go forward. We do plan to spin out the cancer drug into a separate sub. That sub will be ultimately become public. And our plan is once it starts trading and it shows some maturity, we will distribute the shares of that publicly traded sub to the city of shareholders. It's the only fair thing to do, really, in that instance. So with that, I thank you for your attentiveness, and there's a written test for all of you when you leave the room. Thank you.